This is Women of Grace Live, discussing issues important to your life and faith. Spiritual insight, practical wisdom. Join us as we transform the world one woman at a time. Women of Grace, for such a time as this. Now, here's your host, Johnette Williams.
Well, good morning, everyone, and welcome to Women of Grace Live. I am Johnette Williams, absolutely delighted to be with you on this day before Thanksgiving. I am sure you are up to your eyeballs in preparations. We certainly are here in the Williams home. All kinds of activities going on. We've got a bunch of children here. The grands are in from South Florida, and I've got a daughter cooking in the kitchen already, and I know that you are all busy about your preparations, too. We certainly are wishing you a blessed and holy Thanksgiving. We want to remember that there is so much to be grateful for all of the time, even in the midst of the trials and the sufferings of life and the griefs that we experience and the setbacks and the contentious times in which we are living. Our God reigns. There's that beautiful song about our God reigns, right? And our God does reign. And He is the master, the king of the universe, and He loves us unto death. And so we have every reason to rejoice and be glad no matter what it is that's taking place in our lives today. So let's constantly be about the business of seeking the presence of God in our midst, Emmanuel. Then we begin the big preparations that will lead to the coming of the Christ child that we celebrate on December the 25th. And of course, I'm talking about Advent. And I do want to remind all of you that Father John Paul Mary Zeller and myself are going to be at Malvern Retreat House the weekend before Christmas, December 17th through the 19th. A beautiful way, I hope, to cap off your Advent preparation. The theme is Advent, a time for healing, hope, and new life. And we're going to be exploring that theme with you. And I'm quite confident that abundant blessings are in store for you. So we do want you to get out to our website. You can read all about it there. And in fact, where it is that you read about it on the website is a hyperlink. It'll take you to a landing page and you'll see a register button. You can register right online. And you know, God can never be outdone in generosity. So to the extent that we open ourselves up to Him, to the extent that we make use of these opportunities, oh my gracious, to that extent, all of heaven open up for us. So please do plan to spend that time with us there at Malvern Retreat House. And as I say, the info is there for you. 833-288-EWTN is the way that you can join us live today. If you're in North America, we want you to know that we're looking forward to hearing from you on that toll-free number, 833-288-3986. Also available for you if you're outside of North America, country code 1-205-271-2985. Don't be shy about using that number. You know, give it a try. I think you're going to like it once you do. In addition to that, we're available for you out there in social media land. EWTN Radio's YouTube channel and Facebook page is there. Simply use the chat feature to get your question, comment, insight, inspiration, or word of encouragement up on the board. We'll be only too happy to address it. It is a Wednesday, and that means we've got Sue Brinkman with us, and we're going to be talking about all things wacky. So if you've got any questions about the New Age, about the occult, about the way in which individuals are trying to create their own religion by making an amalgamation, if you will, of Christianity and some of these false ideologies that are out there, we certainly want for you to call it. We want to separate the fact from the fiction, and that's what we strive to do every Wednesday here as we talk about these issues. I always want to remind you that numbers of questions and answers are available for you there at our New Age blog. Simply go out to newage.womenofgrace.com. I believe that that is what it is. When Sue comes on, she'll correct me if I'm wrong. But that's the way that you can get to it. I'll tell you the way that I typically get to it. I go out to the homepage of Women of Grace and click on blogs. And there you can put in a search feature, and you can even begin to just pull up those articles that are pertinent to the topic that you want more information about. So use that search feature and see what comes up for you there. So all kinds of good things coming to you. Want to remind you again that we are here live for you, and we want you to use that beautiful toll-free number, 833-288-3986. And we know that you've got some questions brewing. time. So as we like to say around these parts, don't be shy, give it a try, don't delay, call right away, and we are going to get to you. We certainly are. Well, I'll tell you what, we've got a few minutes before we head off to our break. I've told you about the upcoming retreat. We want you to look at that. Certainly want you to look at everything that's available for you on our website. We want you to call 833-288-EWTN. That's 833-288-3986. But, you know, let's just go to Sue right away. Good morning to you, Sue. How are you?
I'm doing just great today. How about you?
Oh, I'm doing really well. Thank you for asking. I'm all excited. We've got some nippy weather here in Birmingham, which kind of puts you in the mood for this season. What's it doing up there in Philadelphia land?
Nice and cold in the morning, like 20 yeah. degrees, 24 degrees.
Cool.
It's like, ooh, it's a little too cold. Got to warm your car up before you go to Mass. But it is now winter. It's officially winter. And it's one of my favorite seasons of the year. So I am not complaining. I'm not complaining. I love winter, mostly because of the food. Because the food is delicious. Stews, chilies.
I know. So here's a question. I mean, I don't know how it is for you, but I have more trouble, pushing myself back from the table in the wintertime than in the summertime. Those hearty meals that you're talking about are so good. And I think we just kind of chow down in winter. I don't know about you.
Oh, I do. But I think it's because, don't you think it's the body's natural way of wanting to insulate itself against the cold? I always say to myself, you can pack on an extra pound or two. You know, you need to do something to combat this cold. And I really do think that because people do tend to gain weight in the winter, if you notice.
Yeah,
gain
activities
weight in winter.
Outside, you know, are limited.
Well, yeah, there's a lot of different.
Yeah. I was just going to say, though, you know, you and I have a mutual friend, Mary Dillon, back up there in Ogdensburg, New York. She's one of our regional coordinator's friends. And, her family, very involved in a lot of outdoor activities in the wintertime, skiing and snowboarding and doing all kinds of things. But that was never like up my alley.
No, I'm a terrible skier. I'm very good at breaking skis because I run into trees.
Oh,
so
dear
I'm
Lord,
not.
Have
yeah,
mercy
yeah.
On Sue, please.
No, I don't do that anymore. I figured that out. And I also can't ice skate. It's terrible. I ice skate on my ankles with my feet sideways. I can't do anything like that. But I do walk. I do go out and I walk. As long as it's not too cold to like where your breath is freezing right in front of you, then I don't walk. But I do walk, and I don't mind being out in the cold. The secret to it, Johnette, is you dress for it. And if you're dressed for it, if you have a hat on, if you've got good woolly socks on and good gloves on, you are going to be okay. I think the hat is really the secret to it. We all kind of know that up here. You just wear your hat when it's really, really cold, and it really doesn't bother you. It doesn't bother you as much as you would think it would to be outside in the cold. You get used to it too. Our bodies acclimate to it. Because I always laugh at you guys from down in Florida. And you say something like,
we're big babies.
It was 65 and I had all my sweaters. My God, that's 65. We're running around in shorts out here in 65. I mean, that's not that cold.
It was always fun for us to see the snowbirds come down, you know, and to come down, and especially people from where it's, you know, bitter cold, like up in Minnesota. And, you know, they would be in the Gulf of Mexico and we would be like in woolies, you know. It's like, how can they go into that water, you know? I don't understand it. But you do acclimate. And 3 years here, up in Birmingham, I can see the subtle changes taking place in my capacity to endure a cold day versus when I first came here. Well, friends, Sue's going to be back with us. We're going to get to the serious topics on the other side of the break there. Not that this wasn't serious. 833-288-EWTN. That's 833-288-3986. Okie dokie. Stay tuned.
The Women of Grace phone lines are open, 1-833-288-EWTN, 1-833-288-3986.
Welcome back, everybody. You are listening to Women of Grace Live. I'm Johnette Williams. We're happy to be with you, inviting you to give us a call here. 833-288-EWTN. That is the number for you to use. It is toll-free for you right here in North America. If you're outside of North America, 1-205-271-2985 is the number for you to use. We're eager, as I say, to hear your lovely voice today. It's Wednesday. Sue Brinkman is with us. We're going to be talking about some of the wacky things that are going on in the world today. today, especially as it relates to the ideologies that are being promoted, and in many cases, trying to be blended with our own Catholic faith, which you really cannot do. It's syncretism. But nonetheless, there are those out there that say it can be done, and they do it. So, you know, Sue, you've got something you want to talk about, and Donna, I'm going to ask you to hold. We are going to get to you, and we're inviting you all to give us a call, 833-288-EWTN. And social media land, EWTN Radio's YouTube channel and Facebook page available for you. We've got Matt Kabinski on phones. We want you to give him a howdy hey. We've got Jeff Burson, who is our producer, going out there and retrieving your questions in social media land. So please do give us all of the information that we need to have so we can address your question. And I want to let you know, if you're a first-time submitter or caller, let us know, and I will ring that welcome bell for you, welcoming you for your first time calling into the program. So, Sue, you know, you've got something you want to talk with us about, and this is something that seems to be growing among the Catholic population as well as, you know, the rest of the world as well. Go ahead and tell us all about it.
This is called the Wim Hof breathing method, and Wim is W-I-M, and the second word is Hof, H-O-F, breathing method. And people are wondering, you know, is this New Age? Does it have some elements of the New Age in it? Anything that's non-Christian in it? And the answer to those questions is yes, it does. It's a combination of breathing techniques, yoga, meditation, and exposure to cold. Mm-hmm. It was developed by the Iceman. This is kind of what his nickname is, Wim Hof. He's a 62-year-old Dutch motivational speaker. And he was actually born into a Catholic household. He was one of nine children. And a researcher named Scott Carney, who actually attended one of Hof's very brutal training sessions, said that, you know, while the rest of the family was learning Catholic liturgy, Hof became very interested in Eastern teachings, memorizing the Yoga Sutras, scouring the Bhagavad, the Gita, the Zen Buddhism for wisdom. So he was going in all those directions. He wanted to find this connection between mind and body. And he said, well, it's not quite what I'm looking for. And then one day he was 20 years old and he just decided that he was walking along a canal in Amsterdam and he noticed the ice, a coating of ice on the top. And he said, you wonder what it would be like if I jumped in there. So he did. He stripped off all his clothes and he jumped in the water.
Wow.
And he recounts, you know, what happened to him during that exposure to that extreme cold. It was very shocking. But he said the feeling wasn't cold. It was of a tremendous good. So he liked the feeling. He said he was in the water only a minute, but he felt like time just stood still while he was in the water. And he said this wash of endorphins cruised through his system. And the high lasted through the whole afternoon, the whole rest of the day. And so Hof began to say to himself, geez, I think the cold is my teacher. It's going to teach me something. And it taught him this breathing technique that really mimics the rapid breathing that people would take if they dive into icy water, but also the rapid breathing that women use in childbirth. Mm-hmm. It kind of mimics that. And in both cases, really, the body switches to this instinctual reaction of human resistance to extreme hot or cold. And he started to develop this, and I actually tried it. It's a system where you sit down, and well, they go into all the clearing of the mind and focusing on breathing, which I didn't bother to do any of that part. But you know, you inhale and exhale 30 to 40 times, and fully inhale and fully exhale. You try to do that 30 or 40 times, and I'll tell you what, you're going to hyperventilate.
Now, when you talk about the when you explain that there, I mean, over what period of time are you doing this? Inhalation, is it one breath after the other?
Right. Uh-huh. Repetitious. So you just repeat that 30 to 40 times. You do these short, powerful bursts. And he says you might experience some lightheadedness and a tingling sensation. Yes, you do. You experience hyperventilation. That's what that is. And he says, but these side effects are completely harmless. After the last exhalation, if you can make it to 40, I didn't even make it to 20. After the last exhalation, you have to inhale as deeply as possible. Let the air fully out of your lung and then stop breathing, holding the breath until you feel the urge to take a breath again. So you hold the breath for as long as you can. Now, Hof makes all kinds of claims about the benefits of this breathing because he himself is able to endure like hiking through the Arctic tundra in shorts, nothing but shorts and a pair of hiking boots. And he's walking in there and he's fine, submerging himself into vats of ice water. I have a picture of that actually with the blog, where he's just sitting in this big tube of ice, and he looks like he's just laughing, you know, like it's fun. Now, according to science, there is some results of some studies that were done that show that the sympathetic nervous system and the immune system, they can be voluntarily influenced in that way. The participants in a 2014 study performed those breathing exercises, consciously hyperventilating themselves, retaining their breath, meditating. And the meditation they used was a third eye meditation. That's the type of meditation that Hoff trained them in. And, you know, science did see some results from that. 2017, another study was done. And scientists believe that the brain rather than the body is what helps you to respond to that cold exposure. And the study suggested that people can learn to control their autonomic nervous system to bring about similar changes. But there's risks to this now. I, you know, dug a little bit deeper into this. There's risks. People who have respiratory problems should not do this, such as asthma. People who've had a stroke, higher or low blood pressure. If you're on certain medications, don't do this. It can also, the hyperventilation, which is, I think, kind of a no-brainer, that poses some problems. First of all, of course, a fall risk, because you hyperventilate, you pass out. But what's happened is some of these people, and this I found a Dutch newspaper that had an article about four deaths that were attributed to the Hoff method. They're alleging that it was attributed to the Hoff method. Three men who were practitioners of it who drowned in a pool. Because they were holding their breath and obviously they passed out while they were in the pool. And another man died after he just got done bragging, I think, to his sister or one of his relatives, hey, I'm going to break my own record of breath holding. The next thing you know, the man's dead. So you got to be careful with that. The recommendation that I leave with people is that you should use extreme discretion before becoming involved with this breathing method due to its association with non-Christian meditation practices and the health risks to certain individuals. You just don't jump into stuff like this with your breathing. And especially not with all this focus on breath. You know, that's very Buddhist. That's how they put themselves into altered states. And you don't want to do this willy-nilly. And also,
I was just going to ask you. I mean, I can't see why you would do it. In other words, like, how many people want to sit in a vat of ice cold water? you know, and you know, how many people want to walk across the frozen tundra in shorts? I mean, it doesn't make any sense. Besides that, you're exposing the rest of your body to the elements, right? I mean, you know, frostbite and all of those other things are not going to go away because you've done this method and you're not feeling, you know, the same sensations as somebody else would. I mean, I just don't know why.
Well,
and that's
my
big question.
Yeah, they want control over their bodies. They want control over their bodies, and they want to make their body under the control of their consciousness.
That's
so this is where you get into sort of like the New Age stuff. I mean, it's and in fact, when Carney went to his class, you know, he said that a lot of when they first started out, like the introduction of it was a lot of New Age mumbo jumbo and that. And he talks about, you know, universal compassion and connection to divine energy. So that's all in there. It's all part of what he's doing. But what he's trying to do is hack the body. And this is very attractive, Carney said, to men. Men are very attracted to this. And they go on these training sessions with Hoff that are brutal. I mean, the stuff that he makes these guys do out in the cold on the ice and snow, like do push-ups and stuff like that. I would never do it. I couldn't even get through 20 breaths without starting to feel lightheaded. Of course, I have hypertension, so I'm not supposed to be doing things like this. But I couldn't get through it. But some people, apparently it's getting to be very popular with people, and they're saying that their bodies, they feel more healthy, they just feel like they have more control over their bodies and that sort of thing. And I wonder, but that's a good question that you ask. Why do you have to have that kind of control over your body? Don't you trust God? You know, what's going on there that you have to have that kind of control over your body systems?
Yeah.
What are you so afraid of?
Yeah.
Or are you afraid of anything? Maybe they just want a different way of doing things because so many of us are into more natural methods of healing. You know, we don't necessarily want to be drugged up as a culture. So that could be what's motivating people. I'm sure that everybody has their own reasons for why they want to do this. But once I looked into it, I had reservations about it. And I thought, you know what? You need to be careful with stuff like this because the New Age has a way of infiltrating itself very subtly into different practices, but it's in there. And what it does is, I think, develops a taste in you for New Age. And it may very subtly lead you into other practices that you think, well, that's okay. I've been doing this and nothing happened to me. So let's just go ahead and get involved in this now too. So you just have to be careful with that sort of thing.
Yeah. Well, you know, and here, the other part of that is that the evil one, you know, takes advantage of every opportunity. And as you say, so often people will go to a class thinking they're going to learn one thing, but they're really being indoctrinated with a whole, again, system of thinking that is outside of the teachings of the church, and, you know, against sacred scripture. So, you know, I just, there's always faddish things that are coming along, and maybe this is a fad that will work its way out, but to me, you know, there just doesn't seem to be any reason why people would want to do this. And I appreciate the idea of wanting to control your body. We would do a whole lot better off if we tried to control our passions.
Yes, exactly. It makes you wonder. Why would a Catholic... there's a spiritual aspect to this breathing thing too, of course. Yeah. And like, why do we need that? And I think that that's the big question that was raised in my mind. Why do I need to do that? Am I still kind of on some level seeking a spiritual thrill of some kind? You know, what am I, I'm always trying to avoid that because I see how that has led so many people into New Age, into Eastern practices. They're really not looking for God. They're looking for a thrill. Of some kind. They want an experience. They want to feel something. Yeah. It's very hard to get used to, not, you know, when Jesus begins to withdraw those consolations and those good, you know, cushy, fuzzy feelings from you. That's difficult, but it's also a transition stage that helps you to mature in your faith. It's something that we need to learn how to muscle our way through with the help of the Lord. So I wonder to myself if you know, people might be trying to get that back, those consolations that God is withdrawing from them, and they're just kind of reaching out here, reaching out there. You know, why would they want to get involved in something like this? I can tell you that even just doing those breaths, at first it felt really good to take a nice deep breath. We all like to do that. But then when it got to be 10, 11, 12, 13, I'm thinking, whoa, wait a minute. And my head started getting like a little swimmy. And I thought, 40, I can't get up to 40 breaths. I'll be laying on the floor.
Yeah.
I'll be unconscious.
Well, you know, there might be another aspect of that that, you know, your comment is bringing into my mind. And I, you know, the spiritual quest, and here I mean an authentic spiritual quest where you're looking for union with the one God who is Father, Son, and Holy Spirit by way of the passion, death, and resurrection of his Son, our Lord Jesus Christ. That is one thing. And I think people can get very confused when the spiritual life progresses and God withdraws those consolations because he wants to be loved for the God who is, not for the God who gives, you know? So there's kind of a, you know, I mean, that's a more mature reality. So we're moving forward that way. So it could be a way of filling that sensation of a void, which is really not a void, because sometimes God's even more active then than he is when the consolations are coming, I would venture to say all the time. But there's that. But then, you know, on a secular thing, Sue, you know, when we have so satiated our passions, I'm just thinking about this now, when we've so satiated our passions with sex or with drugs or with drinking or with shopping or just with consuming whatever it is that we consume, right? Even television, you know, then nothing tastes good anymore. On any level. It's like if you sit down, you know, and you're going to have a piece of cake. That first piece of cake tastes so good, you say, I want a second piece. And maybe you have a second piece, then you have a third piece. And after a while, you're not even enjoying it anymore. And I think that maybe that's what happens. I think that maybe we get to a point where we have so adulterated our sense of satisfaction that nothing satisfies anymore. Everything is bland. You know, everything is you know, kind of flatlined in the sense of experience. There is none of that. So then we go seeking things that maybe subconsciously makes us still feel alive because we don't really feel very alive because we've so indulged ourselves. Am I making any sense?
Oh, you are. What keeps running through my head is pleasure reigns supreme. On the secular level, everything is pleasure. I want to feel good. I want to feel comfortable. I want to feel this. Everybody wants to feel something.
That's right.
And that's what's leading so many people out of Christianity. They're going into these different, you know, New Age, these very esoteric type practices because they promise experience.
Yes.
And the experience is very often had through going into these altered states, this different kind of meditation where you're blanking your mind and you're sitting there for 20 minutes with a blank head. We were talking about this last week on the show. And that begins to induce these, you know, wonderful euphoric feelings you can have from doing that. I mean, who wouldn't feel great sitting 20 minutes blanking out all your problems? You know, of course you're going to feel good. So, but people are looking for that. I think even those of us who are with the Lord, you know, even on maybe some, you know, subconscious level, we still have that secular drive within us that we've got to feel good all the time. We've got to feel comfortable all the time. That's why I think that penitential seasons of Lent and Advent are so very important.
Yes.
And for us to take them seriously, you know, Advent's coming up now and it's a time, a penitential season, and it is a time to begin to mortify that and to take that pleasure reign supreme and knock it off its pedestal.
Yeah.
And say, no, it doesn't. I don't need all this pleasure to be happy.
It reminds me, too, that, you know, the penitential nature of Advent is not stressed anymore. I've even had people argue with me that Advent is not a penitential season. It always was a penitential season. It's not really changed. It's not emphasized as strongly as Lent is in terms of a penitential season, but it is nonetheless that, you know, to make preparation for something, you've got to let go of something, right? So, you know, that letting go of something is a sign of this desire to make preparation. One last thing, we're living in these really strange times and everything seems out of control. Gas prices, you know, food costs, everything is out of control. And so sometimes there's an effort to try to engage in activities that still remind us that we have control. But as you're saying, we don't need to seek in ways that can be deleterious to us in any way. 833-288-EWTN is the way you can join us. We are here. We're going to go to Donna. We're eager to hear from you as well. Call us. 833-288-3986. Coming right back. Sue Brinkman in today. It's Wacky Wednesday. Stay with us.
Transforming the world one woman at a time. Let's return to Women of Grace with Johnette Williams.
Welcome back, everybody. We're so happy you are with us today. Let us know you are with us today. Pick up the phone and give us a call, 833-288-EWTN. That's 833-288-3986. It's the way that you can join our discussion today. Sue Brinkman is in the house. It's Wacky Wednesday. We're talking about wacky things. Phone lines are lighting up, and I thank you that you have called, but we've got room for more of you, and we would love to see your name in one of the boxes that tells us who's with us. So please do call. We're also inviting you to share with us out there at EWTN Radio's YouTube channel and Facebook page. Sometimes you prefer to watch as well as listen, and you can do that there. The chat features the way you communicate with us. Jeff Burson, who is our social media manager and our producer, will dash on out there and retrieve your question or comment, insight, inspiration, or word of encouragement and get it up on the board. Matt Gabinski on the phones, and he will get your question up for us. Do let us know if you're a first timer either way, because we want to ring our welcome bell for you. I have three of them sitting here. I never know which one I'm going to pick up until I pick it up and ring it. They have different tones. So we certainly do look forward to hearing from you today. Well, Sue, let's get to Donna. Donna's been holding since the beginning of the program, Patient Woman. Donna's with us from Ottawa, Ontario. Good morning to you, Donna. How are you?
Good morning, Jeanette. I'm a first time caller.
Oh, goody, gumdrops here. There you go. Welcome, welcome.
And we envy Sue her warm weather. I mean, Ottawa is really cold.
Oh, yeah. It's warm here compared to Ottawa, I'm sure.
Absolutely. Okay. What I'm calling you about is a very, very peculiar situation. The parish that I'm going to, we have a very good priest. He's only there, I guess, about 4 months. But for quite a long time now, we've had this man who has transitioned to a woman. It's almost like Henry goes to Thailand and comes back Hillary, you know, that way. Oh. He's had all the surgery and everything. Now, this man dresses like a woman, wears a blonde wig, and I want to be charitable. Because this person obviously has problems. But He's a minister of. He's an extraordinary minister of Holy Communion. Hmm. I feel now in 2003, a document came out of the Vatican that says, Vatican says sex change operation does not change person's gender, and this document tells the bishops they're never to change a baptismal certificate.
Right.
Now this I don't believe he was baptized in this church. He just came as a parishioner some time back.
Well, I think that the document's absolutely correct. I mean, it's not an opinion on my part. It is absolutely correct because you cannot change your gender. Your DNA is always going to say what gender you are, and there's only two genders, male and female. So, you know, you can mutilate your body. You can have these sex change operations, and you can pretend that you are somebody other than you truly are. But on some level, our subconscious level, we know that it's really a type of play acting. I mean, there's just no way you can change who you are. And I think that people there is such a thing as gender dysphoria, you know, and it is a mental health condition. But I think that what's been created in our day and time, quite frankly, is that there is a, there's a cultural dysphoria that's really been, what's the word that I want to say, forwarded by our secular society at every age and in every demographic. It doesn't matter if you're a little child. It doesn't matter if you're rich or poor. It doesn't matter where you live or what your ethnic reality is. There is this attempt to convince us that this is acceptable, that this is in some way normal. And there's been all kinds of efforts to normalize it, but it's not normal. When it comes to this business on the church, I'm going to send you out to an article that was written this year in May. It's in the Arlington Catholic Herald. It's written by Mary Hasson, H-A-S-S-O-N. And it's Catholic Scholar, addresses gender ideology and transgender issues with compassion and honesty. And I think that this is one of the problems that we have, is that we don't want people to be living, you know, a life that is not a life that's built on truth. You know, and the church has spoken on this. And in this article, Mary Hasson quotes some of the statements of Pope Francis and talks about these kinds of issues. So what would you contribute to Donna's question here?
Well, I had looked up a little bit of information and found that the Vatican Congregation for the Doctrine of the Faith, back in 2015, they did not permit a transgender man in Spain to serve as a godfather, which effectively bars transgendered Catholics from serving as baptismal sponsors. So I know they've taken a position on that. Whether or not they've taken a position on extraordinary ministers, I don't know. But it's something that could be taken up with the bishop. Because of the fact that this person's on display, everybody knows that it was a man before, now is a woman, and this could be causing scandal,
right,
of some kind. And you want to be very careful of that. And bishops are very sensitive to that. It may be something to take up with the bishop to say, not in an accusatory way, but just say, you know, how should we deal with this? Now, the pastor is saying, telling everybody to just, you know, be compassionate and be kind and all that. That, of course, is a nice thing to do. We should be that way with everybody regardless. And we don't really know what is going on spiritually inside that person. Only his priest, his pastor, his spiritual director would really know that. But I think it would be worth pursuing that with the bishop, just to say, okay, you know, how should we feel about this? I feel scandalized by it. I could see the person going to mass, but whether or not the person is distributing communion, or taking any kind of a leadership role in the church, I would raise some eyebrows, I would think.
Yeah,
and it's something to direct. Quite annoyed if people won't like if people prefer to take it from the priest than him. He gets quite annoyed. He just kind of glares.
And the transgendered person or the
transgender person. He's transgendered to a woman. My feeling is
let me just say, Donna, and this is not a castigation against your statement, but he's not transitioned to a woman.
Yeah,
he's not a woman,
why I'm calling him a man. Yeah.
I mean, it's, and you're doing a good job of that, and I think it's important that we, you know, we articulate that because,
yeah,
again, it leads to the general confusion that we have. So yeah, go ahead. I just wanted to clarify
and like
that
the,
a little
you
bit.
Know, we're trying to help. Little kids are in school. They're being taught these things. Then they go to mass, and it's endorsed. What they're being told in school is then being reflected in the parish.
Here's a question that's answered by Mary Hassan in this article. And I mean, it's really a Q&A kind of an article. And the first question is this: most Catholics are compassionate by nature and want to support others. What's a constructive approach that Catholics can take without endorsing gender ideology and transitioning? And she responds, she says, in general, our faith calls all of us to treat everyone with respect and mm-hmm. kindness, acknowledging mm-hmm. the dignity of the person before us, a person truly loved by God. And we need to be compassionate toward those who suffer, literally suffering with and accompanying the person. She says, but the more complicated question is what compassion looks like in a given circumstance and the direction in which we accompany the person. And she goes on and she talks about authentic compassion seeks the good of the other person and accompanies them on the path toward healing and happiness in light of God's plan. It is not compassion. It is not compassionate to validate a person's sinful or harmful choices or to accompany the person towards serious harm, moral or physical. She says, Catholics striving to be compassionate to a person who identifies as transgender need to see clearly the good for that person according to God's plan.
Yes.
The Catechism of the Catholic Church teaches that each person should accept his or her sexual identity, paragraph 2333. In Amoris Laetitia, Pope Francis reminds us that our bodies are a gift from the Lord to be received with gratitude from the Lord. It is not good for a person to assert an identity at odds with the body because we are embodied persons. No one can be born in the wrong body. And if a person's self-perception conflicts with the reality of the body, then the good is to help the person gain a clearer self-perception, one that aligns with the truth. But that can be a complicated task because of the psychological issues that are often involved. And I think that that's it. And I'm not sure that it's helpful to permit a person to participate in that way, in a very public way,
right,
who is struggling, whether they realize it or not, with a major issue. And I think that that would apply across the board for anyone who would offer to be, you know, or desire to be an extraordinary minister or elector. You know, there's got to be a certain suitability. And even Sacred Scripture talks about that. St. Paul writes about that with regard to bishops and their households, right? So there's a certain suitability, and I'm not sure that that's suitable. Frankly, I don't think it's suitable at all.
Well,
so,
everybody, like, he's open about, I mean, everybody knows, and he suffers from depression, a lot of depression and anxiety. And I was wondering if by him being endorsed by the church in this way that he's permitted to be an extraordinary Eucharistic minister, if that maybe gives him a certain credibility in who he says he is now.
Mm-hmm. Well, and that, see, that's not helpful.
It's not. And I'm sure that it does give him some credibility to himself. It's reinforcing himself in what he's doing. It's giving him an affirmation that really isn't healthy.
Yeah.
It's not healthy to affirm him and what he's doing there. It's more like what Mary Hassan was saying, where they really need to be compassionately and kindly and gently led back to the truth of who they truly are so that they
that's
can get
right.
all this anxiety and all this depression that's inside of him. That's where that's coming from. It's not coming right. from the fact that he's in the wrong body. It's coming from the fact that he's not accepting that he's in the right body. And
yes.
and for some odd reason, and we don't know what that reason is, he has determined that his problems are because he's in the wrong body. Which leaves me to think that what the real problem is going unaddressed. So that's why
yeah.
he's anxious and depressed.
Right. And what we do know also, too, and then Donna, we'll leave it at this, Sue, is that the statistics that are available for this segment of the population are not happy statistics, that wow. drug abuse, alcoholism, even domestic violence is up in those populations, and the suicide rate is four times that of the general population. So striving to change our bodies to correspond to a false perception of who we are is not the answer, as you're saying, Sue, to the problem. It only exacerbates it. And I know I had a fellow that called years ago, maybe 3 or 4 years ago, named Brian, who had gone through that surgery. And he said, you have to continue to speak the truth on this. He said, because it doesn't help things. And he wanted to know if it would be okay with the church if he tried to go back to being the man that he actually is, realizing, of course, that he could never regain that which he had sacrificed. Moral theologians say that is a very legitimate thing to do. So we know that this doesn't help. And to affirm somebody in this kind of a thing, I think, is not helpful. And I think that's one of the problems that we have in our secular culture today, that we really have lost our moral compass and a notion of God. Donna, thank you for your call. It was a very good one. We're going to go to Gertrude next. Gertrude, I'm going to ask you to hold on for just a second, though, because I do want to take these two issues, that YouTube questions that came up, Sue, on the Winhoff method. This is Dennis. He says, I am a first-time commentator. And thank you, Dennis. I'm going to ring my bell for you. We're happy to have you with us. He says, I am a first-time commentator. The church has not condemned Wim Hof method. It is meant to heal many ailments that Big Pharma claims to heal, but hurts nothing to do with New Age. Can we address that? I actually incorporate the Jesus Prayer into the method, and it is a way of healing many ailments in the body. And then here's another one. I have an MA in theology from Franciscan University. This might be a continuation. I have an MA in theology from Franciscan University of Steubenville, and I've tested this method and distilled it from any New Age connection. It becomes a form of penance with the cold showers.
Cold showers. I like that one. That's a good one. Okay. No, first of all, the church has not condemned it, nor have we. We have told you to use great discretion before getting involved in it. You have these two that we've just read about. These are your own personal experiences with it. We can't really extrapolate that out into the general public because you don't know who's out there trying this and who is going to go down that road of using third eye meditation or any other kind of meditation. So a cautionary, to put a cautionary flag on this, is, I think, is the prudent thing for us to do here. And that's why we do it.
Because
in the general public, you don't have that kind of key to catechesis. You know, you don't have a lot of people running around out there with MAs in theology. So that really... you really have to be careful with that. To say, well, hey, this is what I say, this is what I do, so this has got to be right for everybody. No, it doesn't. Mm-hmm. And they need to be warned that there are New Age components to this program, and they need to be warned about that breathing and how that can lead you into an altered state. And that may be leading you in an altered state too, whether or not you're using Jesus' name. It doesn't matter.
Right.
If you're using that name to blank your mind in any way, you are putting yourself into an altered state. And that is something that's very attributable to Eastern meditation. That's what they do because they believe that leads to enlightenment. So you need to be careful with it. That's really what we're saying. Just be careful with it. The church does not condemn it. People like to say that, well, what does the church say about this, and that? The church doesn't do that. It's not like a how-to book from them. You need to understand the Bible. You need to understand the catechism and understand what the church teaches on a broad variety of subjects before you can come to a conclusion about whether or not something is good for you or not good for you.
That's right. And it doesn't hurt to have a little knowledge on different heresies, because the heresies are all involved in these things. And that third eye, this idea of the third eye, what is that third eye? It's an opening to the psychic world. And generally speaking, there is an initiative into that in some way. And oftentimes those initiations are going to use these techniques that can and do alter your consciousness. And then you feel like you're merging with the All is One, which is, you know, a monism. And it goes from there to there to there. So, you know, jury's out. Church isn't going to talk about that. The church outlines for you, you know, what the heresies are, what you should be looking for. Jesus Christ, bearer of living water, the document. That's the provisional document, right, on the New Age, Sue?
Bearer of the water of life, yeah.
Bearer of the water of life. That is a very good one for you to read. Well, let's get to Gertrude. She's there in Alexandria, Virginia today. Good morning to you, Gertrude.
Yeah, hi. Listen, I just have a quick question. Some weeks ago, Sue was talking about fortune cookies.
Mm-hmm.
And some time ago, I got a fortune cookie. I don't remember where I got it from. And I want to tell you what it says. It said, God looks after you especially.
Okay.
That's beautiful.
So I wanted to ask Sue what she thinks of that, because I thought it was so beautiful saying. And I saved it and put it in my prayer book.
Okay. Gertrude, that is a beautiful saying. But you have to ask yourself your question. Did you really need a fortune cookie to tell you that? Because you probably didn't. You didn't. You didn't. And
no,
and
but I just thought it was a beautiful, I mean, such a surprise. I never had something like that in a fortune cookie or anywhere.
Yeah, yeah. They're very general, the things that they have, and they're very, very general. But they did originate as fortunes, as a form of divination in Shinto shrines. That's really where they came from. But now, you know, God loves you and he is watching over you in a special way. And if you wanted to keep that fortune cookie slip because it reminded you of perhaps a pleasant experience that you had maybe that evening when you went for dinner, or because, you know, you just loved what God seemed to be saying to you, that's fine. But don't believe that you needed that fortune cookie for that, because then you're starting to get into divination. And you want it, you don't want to move in that direction at all. I mean, if I were you, I would just write that down on a piece of paper and throw that little slip out. That's what I would do if I was you. I would write it down, a little yellow stickum. I would put it somewhere in my Bible. And whenever I wanted to read it, I would just look at it and be reminded of it, so that you don't have any way that you're attaching any kind of power at all to the fact that you got that in a cookie.
I see. Right. Okay. That sounds great. Right. Okay. Thank you.
Thanks,
so much.
Gertrude. Thank you very much. Thank you for your question today. We're going to go to Alan. Alan is there in Texas somewhere. He's listening to us via Guadalupe Radio Network, and we're delighted. How are you today, Alan?
Oh, I'm doing great. How are you?
Good. We're doing really well, thank you.
Yes. Well, as I was explaining to the call screener, the situation that I experienced just made me a little uncomfortable. I didn't know if this was way lay people should be behaving. The situation was in this ministry meeting that we were having. One of the people who has been struggling with issues, we all are praying over him. And the gentleman leading the prayer, part of our ministry, is actually a former priest. He's left the priesthood, and he's a married man now and all of that. But as he's leading this prayer, and everybody's got their hands on it, sort of turns into almost an exorcism where he's calling a spirit out. And the gentleman actually starts to kind of, we all let him lay down on his back because he can't stand up anymore. And then other members of the ministry start, they get out this anointing oil, and they're anointing his forehead and his hands, his chest and his feet, and praying as they do it. Special prayer for that. And, you know, I was just wondering as it's going on, it made me feel uncomfortable. Is this something we do as lay people, as Catholics, that we're supposed to be doing as a way of praying over someone who's having an issue, or is it good? And I should mention this former priest. I've seen him do this with another gentleman where he sort of prays over him and his ass guy.
Yeah.
I know that we have assigned exorcists in the Catholic Church.
Right. So, Alan, you're cutting in and out, and we've just got 2 minutes left, and this is an important question. So go for it, Sue.
Yeah. You know, deliverance prayer is okay for laity to say. That is okay. But you've got to watch it. You can't cross that line where you're going into, you know, actually, you know, calling out spirits and you know, trying to, you know, sit there and wrestle with these spirits. You shouldn't be doing stuff like that. As far as anointing with oil, people use oils from shrines from around the world that they use. It sounds like he's making sort of like an elaborate ritual out of this kind of thing. I would say to you that if it's something that's making you feel uncomfortable, that you don't attend those. Don't attend those sessions then.
Mm-hmm.
He can cross over a line, because the fact that he was at one time a priest, we don't know really what he's doing there. Is it deliverance? Deliverance prayer is fine, but you can't cross over into, you know, calling out, you know, naming spirits and all that kind of stuff. You've got to be really careful about that sort of thing. And like I said, if it's making you uncomfortable, you know, I think twice about going back.
Yeah. And Alan, here's a thought too. I mean, maybe it would be good for you to just have a talk with a guy and just say, you know, can you explain to me what's going on here? Because I was a little uncomfortable about it, and I want to know more, and talk with him. And that'll help you to see and to understand, you know, if he is crossing a line or not crossing a line, but it'll give you some insight and it'll give you some guidance. And as Sue says, you know, this kind of prayer is acceptable. The person falling down, sometimes it's called being slain in the spirit. These are some of the charismatic gifts. But, you know, again, if it makes you uncomfortable, I think that that's what Sue is saying is good. But you might want to talk with him. Hey, Sue, this has been good. Thanks so much. Yes. Have a blessed and happy Thanksgiving.
You too.
All of you, thank you. All of you have a happy and blessed Thanksgiving as well. May God bless you in all things. Bye-bye now.